with the reverses. You know?
Yeah.
And then which have been coming at lightning speed. Really.
And you're up against the end.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not just you.
Oh, yeah. The whole women's thing.
Okay, let's start from what Carol drew you to the women's movement and to this particular aspect of it when you talk?
Well, I was really trying to figure out how to dig myself out of the hole that I had dug myself by having, you know, several children, and trying to, you know, go to school nights and that sort of thing. When I heard on the radio that Betty Friedan and some other women had chained themselves outside the White House. Well, I just, a chill went through me. I mean, I had not, you know, recognized what needed to be done, but the minute that I heard that, I knew that's what had to be done. It was instantaneous, you know, recognition. So I called to see if there was a NOW in Los Angeles, and I found that there was going to be a meeting at the original barbecue down at 8th in Vermont, and I went down there, not knowing.
Just for a second, what year was this? Do you remember that?
I believe that's 70.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what I was going to find. You know, really. I just didn't know what these women were going to look like, and if there, you know, if there'd be 5 of them or 5,000 or, you know, whatever. I mean, it was just complete mystery to me to see what would somebody who wanted to work on that issue even look like. Mm-hmm. And I was really very pleasantly surprised to see that they, you know, just looked like really very normal, happy women. You know, they didn't look too weird, or, you know, I thought maybe they'd just be society women or something like that. You know, maybe just an ordinary person like me couldn't even belong.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was really happy. So the first evening, they gave me a form to fill out as to what I wanted to do, you know, as far as committee work. And I looked at all the various options, and the one that really was dear to my heart was abortion, because I had had a very psychologically traumatic kind of experience in having an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just really recognized what an awful injustice it was that women could not get abortions. And so I signed up for the abortion task force and have been working on that issue ever since. You know, I always found the others very interesting, but I think that strategically, I think that reproduction is very, very fundamental to women's liberation and women's equality.
Okay, we'll return to that issue a little later, but what I want to ask you now is, and these two go together too as well, but you may want to think of them separately. And the first one is, what is your particular series of accomplishments as an individual within this movement? And secondly, what has your group that you've aligned yourself with, or you've created, what are the highlights of this? You may want to distinguish between the two.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if this is fitting in with the interview, but I'd like to start with, because I think it's important to start with my own personal gain. Because I really think that that is what draws every woman into the movement, and if she doesn't get something after herself, she's not going to be in it very long.
Right.
And I think that I have really gained, you know, besides the association with other women, which has been probably the single most important thing. Not to say that I did not associate with women before, because I always have my whole life. I mean, whether it was in Girl Scouts or, you know, women's organizations or school or just my neighbors or, you know, whatever. I mean, I've always found the company of women more satisfying and you know, what I wanted to do. But in, I'm talking about feminists. I'm talking about that kind of mutual support and growth and real deep friendship, you know, not divisive, not, you know, the kinds of things that mar women's relationships, you know, outside of a feminist environment. So that plus the fact that it's really given me personally an opportunity to travel and to grow and to exercise my abilities to create and to lead and to think and to, you know, experience my own power as a person. I mean, I think it really has been tremendously satisfying to me. I wouldn't trade it for anything, you know. It's extremely rewarding, even though simultaneously very stressful. As far as what I've been able to accomplish as a person, I think that I really have been able to contribute, you know, at a at a propitious moment. I just have a long word, but that's the, you know, that there was a time when these ideas were sort of breaking out all over the place. I mean, everybody's consciousness was just rising by leaps and bounds, and it seemed like every day, you know, I would have some huge insight and awareness, you know, that would bring me closer to understanding, you know, how my oppression had really affected my life and what, and get a glimpse of what it could be. And I think that I'm prone, anyway, to being kind of a dreamer. I'm always thinking of, you know, these different, what to me are dreams. I mean, it's like, for instance, prior to becoming in the women's movement, I was a Girl Scout leader. And for several years, I was the leader of the summer day camp for our whole area. And one year, you know, I got the bright idea of, hey, let's, our Eagle Rock neighborhood, let's combine with the neighborhood in East Los Angeles, you know, who doesn't have near as many resources as we do, but they have lots of good leaders. And so why don't we combine and raise money and get buses, and instead of just going to the local postage stamp park, let's go out to this really great camp out in Glendora, you know. And, you know, I just had a lot of fun making that happen. And it was very rewarding to see, you know, all the girls having a really nice summer camp experience. And it was fun working with the women. All the things that have been fun in, you know, the feminist women's health in it, with one very important difference. I realized that the work that I was doing in the Girl Scouts, although it had, it certainly was a good thing to do, and the specific girls did benefit, and the women. But it wasn't really changing society at all. In fact, if anything, it was making it possible to go right on in its exploitation of women, because my labor was for free. I couldn't significantly change the lives of the girls, you know, that were attending. And in order to belong to the organization, I had to subscribe to certain beliefs that I didn't share, like, you know, God and country type, you know, some of the more patriotic aspects or whatever, really bothered me. And besides, I could see that my male counterparts were all advancing in their careers. You know, while I was pouring out just as much, if not more, creative energy, and it was just not getting me anywhere and not really causing change either. So I'm sorry to get derailed into that whole subject, but I think that it's the social change that has happened as a result of women being able to do self-help and self-examination, you know, that I would feel is my greatest contribution.
And that's what kind of fired you up, from what I just instantly said. It fired you up that you had the chance to contribute to this.
I mean, it was really very exciting to be able to make a difference. And the concept of self-help, you know, became such an important tool for the women's, you know, health movement to be able to advance. You know, because we had gotten to a certain point in 1971, that is, you know, our bodies ourselves had put out their first book, and there was always a women's health committee in any women's conference. I mean, it was recognized as a very significant part of the struggle. But we weren't able to really get past that beginning point because the doctors were in control. And being able to do self-help gave women the tools to start clinics and, you know, actually advocate for women and have a much more direct knowledge and understanding of women's health care. So it did really, you know, profoundly affect the course of the women's health movement. And so, of course, affected the lives of a lot of women, too.
Okay, now, when you, when did you, what year and what circumstances led you to kind of break off, not break off from now, but go in the direction of being more independent, let's put it that way? Is that a, you can rephrase that yourself.
Well, the activities in now were very worthwhile, and I enjoy doing it. I helped to organize one of the largest demonstrations that we had in Los Angeles over at Hancock Park. And that was, you know, as part of my now responsibilities working with the women at the Women's Center. But I really found that, you know, the more concrete action of self-help, starting clinics, etc., you know, was very satisfying. I mean, I never saw it as a in any kind of conflict with the NOW activities, but just a different tack that I wanted to take that didn't fit into the more traditional NOW program.
A little bit more radical.
Radical and actually doing the, you know, the more practical.
Okay, what were some of your ideas and your things that you did that were radical? I mean, that you would look back and say, that was part of the radical women's program.
Believe me, I do look back and think of some of the things and wonder how, you know, we ever thought to do some of these things. Well, of course, I think the very first thing that was extremely radical was the idea that we would learn to do abortion ourselves, and we did. We learned how to do abortion.
How did you learn?
Well, the first way, when we first started, it was by going to observe over at an illegal clinic on Santa Monica Boulevard. We, you know, the Women's Center referred women there because it was an outpatient clinic as compared to the other hospitals, and women didn't have to, it was illegal, so they didn't have to get a psychologist to say that they were crazy. It was much less degrading. So, but, you know, we also went along with the women that we referred to advocate for them and make sure they had a good experience. So that's where I became, you know, aware of how to use a speculum and, you know, what my cervix looked like and, you know, and to realize how utterly mystified we had all been. And, so then after observing there, we had some questions because the people performing the abortions were far from what the... They were on the unsavory side, let me put it that way. And we had some concerns, you know, that maybe we were not getting as full of information as we ought to. So Lorraine Rothman and I drove up to Washington State. And at that time, it was possible for paramedics to do abortions. So
In Washington State. I see.
So Dr. Franz Kummey, who had a clinic there, also taught us how, even, you know, using a different method, so that we were able to get an even deeper, you know, training. So that, I think that was a fairly radical act to take, to say, well...
It was about 1970, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're just going to learn how to do it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, our idea at that time was to open up our own illegal clinic,
mm-hmm,
to challenge the laws.
Mm-hmm.
But it was about that time that abortion began to be more available. Largely due to the work of, you know, people in the Women's Center and to the free clinic and so forth, that, you know, they began to encourage the local medical people to set up, you know, outpatient clinics.
And this was still illegal, but it was being done.
No, it was legal.
It was legal then.
What made the clinic illegal was two things. One is that it was a clinic. At that time, abortions were only legal in a hospital.
Oh.
And the other is that the practitioner was not a doctor. So those two things. But, no, abortion was legalized in 67, actually, in California. But,
nationwide in
73. Okay. So, it just hadn't been implemented. You know, the medical profession just didn't want to fool with it.
Mm-hmm.
Besides, they were making a lot more money letting women in their back door than in their front door. So, you know, that it took that long to actually become a reality for women.
So then you what happened next? You did open the clinic?
No, we decided instead to have educational consciousness raising meeting,
mm-hmm,
which we call self-help clinics, at the Venice Every Woman's Bookstore,
mm-hmm,
on Washington Boulevard. And the idea was to basically to help women to see what a good procedure was and to start our own, you know, just informal group. And also to learn menstrual extraction.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. which is a method of extracting your menstrual period that Lorraine Rothman developed a device for us to use. And the idea being that if women could learn a little bit more about their body, that they wouldn't be forced to go to the medical profession to beg them to do abortions for them. And, I'm very happy that the Supreme Court decision happened when it did, obviously. It saved thousands of women's lives. And it also, you know, helped millions of women to, you know, lead their lives in a more productive, less, you know, oppressed way. But, you know, it so happens. I mean, had it been another year or so before the abortion would have been legalized, I'm sure that menstrual extraction would have become widely practiced in the United States. It was spreading like wildfire at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Women's groups were learning to do menstrual extraction. And it is a pity that it didn't have that chance, even though mm-hmm. I would never want to do it at the expense of the law not being changed. But I'm just speaking now about that because it's a very safe, simple procedure, very effective. And had it really gotten out and gotten employed, you know, by wide numbers of women, I think we would have said, take your stupid law and you know what you can do with it, because mm-hmm. it's not enforceable. And, you know, I think that would have been a much more profound and radical
political change.
Yeah. But as it so happened with the, and this is not entirely coincidental, because, you know, in the Supreme Court decision they mentioned menstrual extraction. It's in their opinion, yeah. So I'm sure that those justices got the message of, hey, if we don't legalize this thing, with this women's movement coming along as it is, they may take the control out of our hands entirely. You know, I wouldn't say that's too implausible.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's a very important, seems to me like a very important point. A really important thing mm-hmm. to remember that one tends to forget it if you're not in touch with the mm-hmm. you're really not. That, you know, there are different modalities, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And we still can keep that in mind. You know,
mm-hmm.
it was the uptight
mm-hmm.
thing that's going down right now. I mean, you know, we've taken it in our hands before. We can do it again.
We can do it again. Right.
You don't scare me.
Yeah, I think really we've, although it didn't become widely practiced, it did become enough so that it's a really solid accomplishment. As you say, it is there, ready for women to take up if so needed.
Mm-hmm.
And so to just let them, you know, continue on. I visited the Supreme Court when I was in Washington, D.C. We went to hear the hearing that day, or actually the decision. And as you walk in, after you've been searched and all your belongings have been taken from you, etc., you know, and everybody's told you to shush and you've been made to be properly respectful, etc., you walk through a hall and all the pictures of the former Supreme Court justices are there. And I'm sure, you know, that to a person who didn't know about menstrual extraction, that could be a tremendously oppressive experience to walk in and see all those old men, you know, and think, what chance do we have for them to ever care what happens to women at all?
Mm-hmm.
But when you've got that technology, like, you kind of can thumb your nose at them.
This is just off the record. I mean, it'll be on the tape, but okay. But it is, you know, it's like what makes a person who has the potential to be a radical person. In other words, do things that are not things that good girls do. I know, this is interesting.
You know? It is interesting, right? I don't know, because certainly I don't think anything happened to me that has not happened to millions of women. I will say that I had a little more of it happen to me than the average woman, but I think certainly a big part of it was the fact that the women's movement was there to join. You know, I could have had all the discontent in the world, but had there not been that wave, that whole atmosphere, where would it have gone?
Okay.
But, I mean, the things that happened to me were, unwanted pregnancies, suburban housewife experience, poverty. I had really very difficult, you know, times that way, just trying to raise a bunch of little kids while being on welfare, that sort of thing. So, but where
did you
come,
Carol, from lower middle class family, in your background?
That was my background in the first place. So, you know, fairly poor people. But in addition, my husband had gotten TB, and he was hospitalized for a year when my children were all babies. And you know, that kind of was the extra. We were just barely making it before, and that kind of was the finishing blow, you know. So, yeah, I would have to characterize it as a pretty financially hard up, you know, life.
Mm-hmm.
But no different than many, many other women. But I think being in Los Angeles, a major city, where there was, you know, a lot of activities that I could fit into, I think that was a big help for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, in fact, when we started the self-help clinic, the members of the ongoing group, one woman lived in Palos Verdes, another in Orange County, I lived in Eagle Rock, another one lived in El Segundo. We drove about an hour each to get to our meeting. You know, it took a huge population to have four, you know, of these really radical crazies that wanted to do this.
Right. It's interesting. It's like you said, the time is propitious, was propitious, and but there are certain characteristics that make a person a radical person, you know, and willing to take the kind of risk. I mean, the women don't usually take, you know, we were willing to take those risks and be outside the law sometimes.
Mm-hmm. If necessary.
Yeah. And,
well, I think that another thing happened to me, and that was that, a year or so before I actually became a feminist, that I went through what could only be described retrospectively as a nervous breakdown. It was one of those nervous breakdowns that the world does not know happened. Only you know. You know, I mean, I kept in harness and everything, but I was very, very depressed. And just really, you know, I was solely, all I could keep in mind was, you know, keep taking care of my kids. I mean, that was the only thing that kept me motivated to keep going, because I was so severely depressed. And frankly, after having had that very, well, I can only say horrible experience, nothing that could be done to me would equal it. I mean, I really felt at that time that mental health, which is feeling good about yourself and being true to yourself and fighting back against those people who are trying to put you down, is so essential. You know, that as you say, we've been willing to go outside the law or whatever it was, and at least in my case, the alternative.